TED Audio Collective.
I'm Elise Hugh, and you're listening to TED Talks Daily. Any mapping geeks out there are going to know today's speaker. It's Jack Dangermond, the head of Esri, the mapping tools platform. In his conversation with TED's technology curator, Simone Ross, Dangermond talks us through the thinking behind using data science to solve problems and better understand systems and help us do work better. It's a talk that goes way beyond tech. Halfway through, he shares a smart gardening analogy that made me think and feel hopeful about the future.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
TED Talks Daily is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary.
Like TED Talks? You should check out the TED Radio Hour with NPR. Stay tuned after this talk to hear a sneak peek of this week's episode.
Jack, I would love you to tell us what Esri is and also why GIS is so important.
So it is a company. It builds software products that are used by millions of people, kind of like platform technology, but not literally platform. It builds tools that help people do their work better. And that's a very general statement, but helps them do their work better using geography as a science and visualization as a science and technology to help them make better decisions or help them be more efficient or help them communicate what they're doing better. It's kind of mapping. I mean, the way normal people would think of it is map making. So this organization has 350,000 organizations that we support, and they range from NGOs, thousands and thousands of them working in conservation or humanitarian affairs, to large corporations. But our majority of users are in public sector, in cities and counties, in national government agencies. They're basically running the world.
So right now we hear a lot about companies using tech to improve the world, but it sounds like that has always been baked into your DNA.
I grew up as a young kid in a nursery. My parents were servants, and they started a little nursery to help put me through school. That's the way I saw it. They were immigrants, and they grew plants. They were attracted to landscaping, which I grew up understanding. So I went to design school, first environmental design school, and then landscape architecture and then city planning. And in that progression, I came to understand very clearly the idea of problem solving, because that's what design really is about. You see a problem and you come up creatively with something that solves the problem. And at Harvard, I started to get engaged with systems and computing. And I realized, wow, this was in the 60s, you know, when environmental movement was still just in its birthing. I saw, wow, you could actually apply tech to environmental design. And so this idealism that often happens when you're in school, you know, the world is, I can really do something. Well, I love the idea of taking systems theories and technology and applying it to environmental design problem solving.
Do you call Esri a tech company?
We started doing little projects, you know, locating a new town, locating a store, locating a transmission line, doing environmental studies as a foundation using tech to be able to make decisions, which are largely design decisions or planning decisions. And we did that for about 10 years, just gradually growing as a professional services company, all the time continuously innovating tools that would help us do our projects better. and this idea of continuous innovation. I mean, we invented some of the first digitizing tools of maps. We invented some of the first computer map making tools. We invented the first spatial analysis tools that were commercial in nature. And over that decade or so, customers began to say, gee, I'd like to do that work that you're doing, Jack. So we started to think about the idea of a product, that is our technology that we applied on project by project, could actually go into a product that people could use everywhere. And the big idea of this product, Simone, was the integration of information using geographic principles, bringing all the different factors together to not only first help us do the projects, but then build these systems that help other people do the projects and then later build systems. So we went from a project company to a product company that built systems that helped organizations do their work better.
What you're doing, I believe, is sort of this sort of integration of sort of human and built systems with natural systems.
Yes.
And then helping people visualize that and figure out then how they can design and build for that in a better, smarter way. Is that accurate?
That's one aspect of it. We sometimes call that geodesign.
Mm-hmm.
We digitize or abstract geography, the science of our world. You know, Simone, all of the factors that you think about, I think of as layers. Physical mm-hmm. features, environmental features, demographic mm-hmm. features. We bring all of those things together in a GIS. And then by overlaying those things, we can actually do better designs. We design with all the factors holistically. That's what actually, as a student, got me excited, because I saw you could bring all of the ologies, all the geology, the sociology, the climate all together, and then make better decisions on that. So I think of geography as the mother of all sciences, because it's an integrative technology. And then digital geography, what we call GIS, allows us to be able to use that instrument to empower the transformation of how people make decisions. They can
right.
look at the whole, not just one factor, not just making money, not just conserving land, not just this or that. It's optimizing many factors at the same time. So in the retail sector, people like Starbucks or Walgreens or Walmart, all the big retailers, both here in the U.S., but in the U.K., all around the world, use geographic factors to pick the right location. They look at the demographics, the traffic, and then the large insurance companies and reinsurance companies look at all the different factors that are necessary to understand risk, and they overlay them and they model them and they visualize high-risk areas or low-risk areas. In disaster response, there's a whole cycle of work that has to happen when disasters happen. Response, recovery, all these work activities are underpinned by having good information. And that information is geographic in nature. When something like the pandemic happens or unemployment due to the economy happens, we can look geographically and see these factors all coming together. So it's like your mind does in many ways. We built a tool that allows you to abstract reality and see it, and then look at all the relationships between these factors in order to create understanding.
And it is a platform that you're building, right? So you're sort of connecting all these different areas of knowledge, right?
Today we have what we call web GIS. So GIS lives in the web with distributed centers of information that are pulling data out, geo-referencing them, and using location as a way to do the integration. We might call it mashing up different layers from distributed services or distributed sources of information. And our users are now bringing this knowledge together dynamically in things like smart cities, or the popular vernacular these days is digital twins. All of that geographic reality can now be beamed into organizations, whether they be emergency response organizations or utility organizations or government in any of the different departments, whether they be law enforcement or, you know, science, climate change, biodiversity, all of that series of issues that we're facing today can be enriched by not only bringing together the information in real time measurement seen on maps, but also integrating those, like using spatial analysis or location analysis to look at the relationships and patterns. You see, it's not just seeing it, it's also explicitly understanding the relationships between something like breast cancer and pollution that might exist in a particular geography, and saying, aha, we can quantitatively understand these different factors and, as a result, respond.
You had said last year at the GeoDesign Summit, transformation is not just about change, it's about leaving behind the past to focus on the future. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Historically, we have been at the effect of the environment. I mean, this is the history of the world. The world constrains us in what we can do as human beings, and we often adapt and adopt to various environmental situations. This field of geodesign is about bringing geographic systems and knowledge into the design process so that we can actually be guided by nature and be more sensitive to it, so that we can be responsive to the greater forces of the environment. And thinking of the world as a garden, it's like gardening. You must pull out the weeds, you nurture your plants, you take care of certain things, you make sure things are watered. And at this point, because of the way we are organized and the way we think and the way our information is brought to us, we don't think as a garden. We don't think holistically. We don't think of the relationships that are in our lives, that are affecting our lives. And as a result, we're careless. We're polluting the environment. We're messing it up. I mean, on steroids. I mean, the world is really in trouble at this particular point. I mean, we have the crisis of COVID, but my God, COVID is just a little wave. What's coming behind us is the climate change issue, which is not so easy to fix. There's no vaccine. And so as human beings, my sense is we've got to be more responsive to take care of our place.
It's transformation with science and design as opposed to transformation brought on or foisted on us by rapid tech change. Like, it sounds very deliberate.
It's very deliberate. I mean, again, when I was a student, I got the vision or thought that we could actually do environmental planning and design and development better by thinking holistically, bringing all the factors together. And when I launched ESRI, we were starting to do projects better because we could integrate all of the factors into the design projects. Then as we started building systems, they were first small focused systems for a particular department, like a engineering department in a city or a planning department or a forest management organization or an oil company. They could do their work better by considering all the factors. And that transformed the way projects were done, and it transformed human activities in these different departments. From there, we started to move on to the idea of transforming entire organizations. This meant entire enterprises. So from projects to systems to organizational transformation, where you could actually have organizations through, by intention, look at all the factors. And we have so many examples of this. And now there's a fourth phase that we're very engaged in. Those three phases involve certain kinds of technology innovation. But the fourth phase is resting on the web with web services. And its intention is not to transform simply one organization at a time or one project at a time. It's to transform society so that we can raise the bar with geographic consciousness and geographic knowledge to see what our human footprint is causing. And this is so transformational because people don't want to mess up. They want to know what to do. And they want to put the foot down in the right location. They don't want to mess up wetlands by intention. They want to design with nature.
So this is what you're talking about, what you call a geospatial nervous system.
Yes, building a geospatial nervous system will allow us to guide society in such a way. And in a way, it's not somebody guiding others. It's not like that at all. It's like the internet itself. It's an interconnected network of serving knowledge, sharing knowledge, and using each other's knowledge. That is multidisciplinary knowledge, different kinds of science knowledge to be able to see and understand before action. All we're doing is building tools that interconnect different organizations' information and independent actors running in independent organizations all around the world are building something I like to call the geospatial infrastructure. And they're layering it on top of the web. It's like one agency is serving their information and another one is able to use it with their own information and therefore make better decisions, make more sustainable decisions. Let me give a practical example. The Pacific Gas and Electric Corporation, a very large organization here in California, one of the largest utilities in the world, is sharing their outage and utility information over the web with the state of California fire people and emergency management people so that they can act better and vice versa. So they're sharing and collaborating through geographic information in whole new ways. And the FEMA, the large federal emergency management organization, is sharing their emergency management information with states and cities who are overlaying their data on FEMA data, which is overlaying on top of NOAA's information on the weather and the tracking of satellites and so on. So this web-based, internet-based system is allowing the fusion of information from many different actors. And independently, these actors are able to more holistically solve their problems.
Do you think we can overcome these challenges?
Today, both because of our increased consumption patterns and the overpopulation of the planet, we're in severe trouble. So what we can do is, I think, minimize the impact of population. We can optimize the work that we do. We can save energy. We can do all of these various things. And I have a very positive feeling about the future. This is what drives me day and night. I mean, I have had that vision for over 50 years that we must do this. It's not a question of the outcomes. It's the only way that I can think of to create a sustainable future is we must apply our best science. We must apply our best design and critical thinking. We must apply our best systems theories. We must apply our best technologies in concert to be able to address the great challenges that we are all facing. And ESRI as an organization has always been and will always be all about bringing those forces together to be able to support organizations independently doing their work in this more holistic way. That's the big vision.
So what advice or guidance would you give to a young entrepreneur today who sort of wants to use tech and science to, you know, if not save the world, transform the world or improve the world? Because obviously that's where a lot of the hope and the potential is. So as someone who has been doing this for quite some time now, what would your advice be to someone like that?
I was very lucky with parents who were servants, and they taught me to be in service to others. This was a great value gift. When I went to Harvard, there was also a philosophy there to be in public service, to be able to focus your life, to be able to give back. In the UK, Oxford and Cambridge had that same kind of philosophy of growing the next generation that's in public service. So I think service is one of the elements. A second one is really being about staying focused on your vision. For me, my vision was this idea of bringing systems theories and science and technology together to be able to do better problem solving, first with design and then now whole organizations and society in general. That didn't just happen. It was thoughtful time spent by myself and with my wife to think about what we should do with our life. We had no idea where it would go, but at least we picked a segment of our interest to be able to follow this passion, and we lucked out. We didn't sell out. We lucked out. We were very fortunate to live modestly, very modestly, for several decades to build up this organization and stay focused on our purpose. So my suggestion is find something that you really love, that you really can contribute to, that really can support your idealism, and don't sell out for money or venture capital or borrow money. None of that actually winds up in being able to retain your idealism.
So I think there is so much happening on the intersection of tech and life science right now that is so exciting, but also at this intersection that you're talking about as well, and very much, I think, will be part of the solutions for us going forward.
I think that this big step of web GIS that we're into right now will happen over the next few years, and it's in some ways just in time. Like the UN has organized their SDGs, these global sustainability issues, into this web GIS platform. We're building a system which is bottom-up in country by country that allows all the SDG reporting to be able to tell the world, like they did with COVID, what's happening with the other 290 indicators, whether it's, you know, women in politics or whether it's loss of forest or water quality. This is a big deal. So it isn't just organizations anymore. We're starting to see unifiers, integrators of the individual systems into this system of systems, which I think can talk to the world and transform the world. This is essential if we are going to evolve to a society that's sustainable.
Right. I think that is a perfect place to stop. Okay. Thank you so much. This was really wonderful. I'm really, really glad that we got to do this.
TED Talks Daily is hosted by me, Elise Hugh, and produced by TED. Theme music is from Allison Layton Brown, and our mixer is Christopher Fazy Bogan. We record the talks at TED events we host or from TEDx events, which are organized independently by volunteers all over the world. And we'd love to hear from you. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or email us at podcasts@TED.com.
20 years ago, Jimmy Wales founded Wikipedia as a place for everyone to share information. But he wasn't exactly sure how to run the site.
How do you put together a system that will generate a reasonable degree of quality and, you know, be open?
Ideas about building communities, online and off. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Subscribe or listen to the TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.